And this is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Hurricane Irma and Maria's passing and aftermath have once again brought to light Puerto Rico's primordial conundrum, colonialism. Together, they have left the island in shambles. Luis Rosa Perez and Rafael Bernabe, two of the island's most prominent social change agents, survey the damage on the ground wrought by the storms whose devastating path through the island was paved by Puerto Rico's status as a U.S. colony.
Luis and Rafael take stock of the island's needs, one people, one voice, against unjust laws that have been systematically oppressive and exploited the people and resources of Puerto Rico and prevented the socioeconomic growth and the sustainability of the island.
Luis Rosa Perez is a former U.S.-held Puerto Rican political prisoner of war. He served almost 20 years in U.S. prisons for fighting to free Puerto Rico from the colonial relationship it's had with the U.S. since 1898. In 1999, he and a group of Puerto Rican prisoners of war were given clemency by President Clinton. Luis Rosa Perez's commitment to his people have been described as sacrifice without hesitation.
And Professor Rafael Bernabe is a researcher and professor at the University of Puerto Rico. He's the author with Cesar Ayala of Puerto Rico, An American Century, A History Since 1898.
Glad to be with you.
And by the way, you should talk to each other. You know, Kenneth and I will be glad.
Well, if we start speaking in Spanish, then you won't understand us.
Oh, I don't know about that. Do you underestimate us?
Maybe, yes.
But I want to start with, it's more than a month now after Maria. Dozens of communities are still inaccessible by car or truck. Tell us, and let's begin with Luis first, who's in Aguadilla. What's happening on the ground? What are the issues of material need and deprivation that are faced by the people in Puerto Rico this whole month plus later? Luis?
We're still battling with the need for clean water, electricity on a consistent basis. A little less than 40% of the island has electricity. We have communication, it comes and goes as far as like the telephone services. The Puerto Rico telephone company that had underground or subterranean wires sustained, was able to continue servicing after the hurricane, while others that bombarded the island and with towers, with communication towers, were left in the dark, like AT&T and Verizon and all the other companies. There is some communication, there is some water being delivered to the houses with the pipelines, but not enough, and we don't really trust it. There's still major problems with the water source.
Rafael?
Yeah, the situation is still, as Luis says, is still very bad. At least 60% of the people still lack electricity. That percentage is much higher in the interior of the island. In the mountainous interior of the island, you have many municipalities that basically have no electricity. I was recently speaking to somebody from Orocovis, which is a town near the center of Puerto Rico, and they say that basically nobody has electricity in that area. Evidently, the lack of electricity makes it very difficult to provide adequate medical and health services. Many of the hospitals are still running with generators that many times fail, and therefore the whole system of the hospital breaks down. I personally have a three-year-old son, which I had to take to the hospital recently. And while we were there, the electricity went off in the hospital. So you can imagine the situation in a hospital that has five or six floors full of people who are receiving services, and suddenly there's no electricity. In the same way, there are many people still don't have running water, and many people have difficult access to drinking water, particularly, as I said, in the interior of the island. The government reports in a rather untrustful way I think many of the situation in Puerto Rico, if you look at the map that you can see in the internet of the municipalities that already have electricity in Puerto Rico, one of the municipalities that they say has electricity is Trujillo Alto. I live in Trujillo Alto. I'm speaking to you from Trujillo Alto. There's no electricity in Trujillo Alto. So I don't know why they make such a statement or give such an image. So the situation is still very difficult, and as it's a situation that one would somehow expect to be the case a week after the storm, 2 weeks after the storm. But now here we are here, you know, 54, 55 days after the storm. So the response of the federal agencies, the emergency federal agencies in Puerto Rico, has been very slow and very inadequate in response to this very, very extreme situation that we have.
We've heard Donald Trump sneeringly talk about Puerto Rico as a dependent with extreme debt crisis before the hurricane, and that its electrical grid had been allowed to deteriorate before the hurricanes. Well, obviously that's true, but I want you to contextualize it and talk about the supposition that we raised to begin with, which is that the colonial status of Puerto Rico paved the way for some of the material devastation created by Irma and Maria. Luis?
Yeah, the crisis we're suffering now didn't come as a result of two hurricanes. It came as a result of over 100 years of colonialism, where the Jones Act prohibits us from using any other shipping lanes other than the U.S., which is three times higher than any other in the world. And most of the debt, it can be attributed to even that. It also has allowed for proxy governments who create projects that are spending a lot of money, spending a lot of these resources, and not coming about. For instance, the gasoducto, some of the pipelines are still laying over there without laying in one of the municipalities without being used. But imagine if it was actually put together and with the cause of the hurricanes, or the destruction that would have caused. But there's been the main cause of what we're suffering now, the imposition of a quasi-government over a government with the junta, is evident of the colonial conditions that we live under.
And Rafael, could you expand on that with regard to the delivery of services and how that accents the need for a reconstruction plan for Puerto Rico?
Yes, absolutely. As Luis was saying, the situation, the storms in Puerto Rico, Irma and Maria, have aggravated the crisis that we were going through. They have not initiated that crisis. Before the storm, Puerto Rico was already suffering the consequences of a 10-year-long depression. The economy of Puerto Rico has not grown for 10 years now. We have been in a depressed, stagnant economy for 10 years. About 250,000 jobs have been lost in Puerto Rico during the last decade. That's about one-fifth. 20% of the jobs that existed in 2006 disappeared over the last 10 years. Imagine if the United States lost a fifth of its jobs during a decade. The whole of American society would be in a very deep crisis. Well, that is the situation in Puerto Rico, which also explains why many Puerto Ricans were already leaving the island at an accelerated pace over the last 5 or 6 years. Many were leaving the island because they don't have jobs. They cannot find any employment here. They have to go to the United States to see if they can make a living there. So the fact that the press has made much of the fact that there's a lot of Puerto Ricans leaving the island as a result of the storm, well, the storm has accelerated that exodus, but it didn't initiate the exodus that was going on before. As Luis was saying, the economy of Puerto Rico has been stagnant. The irony of the situation of Puerto Rico is that while the economy doesn't grow, while the government doesn't have resources and therefore goes into debt, there are nevertheless corporations in Puerto Rico, U.S. corporations, that generate a tremendous amount of profit. The estimate of all economists is about $35 billion a year in profits that they generate in Puerto Rico, most of which pays no taxes or very little taxes, and most of which is not reinvested in Puerto Rico. So you have an economy which is very profitable to a very small group of corporations, but does not in any way satisfy the needs of the people. And the government, instead of trying to recuperate some of these profits that leave the island, has went into debt to a very large extent over the years, until the point that that debt became simply unsustainable, unpayable. Our position has been over the years that that debt of Puerto Rico cannot be paid. The only way that it can be paid is by inflicting unacceptable human suffering on the people of Puerto Rico. Therefore, that debt, we argued for the longest time, has to be audited and has to be renegotiated. I believe that now, after the storm, after the impact of the storm in Puerto Rico, the catastrophic impact of the storm, that position has to change. Our position has to be that the debt of Puerto Rico has to be canceled. This debt cannot be collected. To collect a debt from a people who have suffered the devastation that the Puerto Rican people have suffered and the reconstruction that they will now have to undergo, to collect that debt now would be criminal, an act of inhumanity, which is quite unacceptable. So our first demand would be for the cancellation of the debt, given the new circumstances created by the storm. The second thing that we need is for the U.S. Congress to assume the responsibility that it has. Ironically, the U.S. Congress has insisted till now, you know, over 120 years, that Puerto Rico is a possession of the United States. Well, if it's a possession of the United States, Congress at least should take the responsibility of the situation that exists here. We think that Puerto Rico has the right to receive a significant amount of funds to reconstruct the island. I have always argued that this is in the interest of working people in the United States. The situation right now in Puerto Rico is that you have an economy from which U.S. corporations take out a lot of money, but poor people in Puerto Rico have no jobs. We have a very high unemployment rate in Puerto Rico. And therefore, you have federal funds that have to be spent in Puerto Rico to kind of subsidize this dysfunctional economy for the benefit of U.S. corporations. It's in the interest of the Puerto Rican people and in the interest of U.S. working people that Puerto Rico gets an economy that functions, that can generate employment and income for its people, and therefore requires no subsidy. So I think the situation generated by this hurricane should be an opportunity to reconstruct our economy in a way that it works for the people of Puerto Rico, in a way that is not a burden for the working people of the United States. And I think we should work together in that direction.
You know, one of the things that Luis Rafael was saying is clearly the dependent and colonial nature of Puerto Rico's economy lies at the root of the mm-hmm. high levels of unemployment. I'm going back and remembering, from the 80s. Do you remember the 2020 plan? We talked about that a bit. And I have this apprehension, as happened, for example, in New Orleans, that reconstruction and rebuilding is not rebuilding for the people indigenous to the area. That, if anything, it facilitates a kind of gentrification and the ushering in the case of Puerto Rico, the likelihood of it becoming again or more so a playground community for the U.S. mainland elite. And I'm wondering to what extent you have those kind of concerns and to what extent those multinational plans, the massive mining operations and so on from things like the 2020 project, are this becomes an advantage for them to surge ahead, particularly since the island is virtually under the control of PROMESA, the Puerto Rican Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act. What do you think? Let's start with Luis and Rafael, by all means.
I was always under the impression that the 2020 plan was not shelved. It was just continuing in a slower pace than they wanted it at the beginning. But if you look at the construction of the expressway, the number 10, through Utuado and up to Ajuntas, where they discovered copper mines. If you look at the water pipeline to serve the industrial parks. And now when you look at the depopulation of the island and the gentrification of the major cities in the island, you see the 2020 plan coming back to life. And you've had even some senators in Puerto Rico from the PNP government who have alluded to the possible strip mining as a source of revenue where it can pay some of this debt. So I never thought it was dead, the 2020 plan. And I think now under these conditions, it is something that we need to revisit, something that we need to rethink and work against. Because if you look at, like you mentioned, the construction that's happening now in areas like Rincón and San Juan and Vieques, Culebra, and some of these towns are not apartments for Puerto Ricans. They're condos for the elite. They're condos for immigration of North Americans and even Europeans coming into the island and basically serving the finance capital and not really for us. We've been given, and we're being given it on a daily basis, tickets to out of here to Orlando and to Chicago and to Texas. And we're being recruited as teachers, the bilingual teachers in Texas and in other states. So, yeah, there is a depopulation happening. There's a displacement also. And we're slowly seeing a gentrification happening in this country, like it's happening in Chicago and New York and elsewhere.
Rafael?
As you mentioned, the situation in New Orleans after Katrina is very similar to the one we are experiencing in Puerto Rico right now. I personally think that they don't even need a plan. They are operating in the search of very short-term profits, and they are taking advantage of the situation generated by the storm to carry out plans or objectives that they had before the storm. Whether they are part of a plan or not, it's hard to know, but they are doing it. I'll give you an example. They are trying to take advantage of the present situation to push forward the privatization of the electrical system. This is something that they have wanted to do for the longest time. And now that the electrical system has collapsed, that people are desperate to have electricity turned back on and so on, they want to use this emergency to say, okay, we have to rebuild the electrical system. We don't have money to do that. Congress is not going to give us money to do that, so we have to go to the private model, the private investors. In the same fashion, most of the schools in Puerto Rico are still closed. The whole educational system is paralyzed. And as you know, in New Orleans, the similar situation was used in order to push the model of charter schools and to privatize or
Precisely.
Semi-privatize the schools. One sees that probably they're going to try to push that type of program given the present crisis that we are living in Puerto Rico. In the same fashion, the economic crisis which we have been undergoing is going to become deeper now, at least in the short term. I read that there are at least 10 or 12 hotels which have closed or partially closed. That is thousands of workers that are going to be out of work or are already out of work. And most of these workers, many of these workers, are going to have to migrate. They're going to have to try and find jobs somewhere else because they are not going to find jobs in Puerto Rico. So all of these situations which existed before the storm, or all of these plans which were already formulated before the storm, are now being accelerated or being put forth as solutions to the crisis. And needless to say, one of the difficulties we have right now is that under normal conditions, you would have people mobilizing, you would have people organizing, you would have people protesting, marching or carrying out pickets, all sorts of activities to protest some of these programs and plans. But right now, most people are basically trying to survive and trying to, you know, make sure they have water for tomorrow or to solve some very immediate problems. So it really makes it much more difficult for us to mobilize. And that's one of the reasons why the job and the work that you people do from the United States, keeping an eye on what's happening in Puerto Rico and denouncing the situation in Puerto Rico, is very important. Because during these weeks, many times people from outside Puerto Rico concerned about Puerto Rico were far more able to speak up or speak out about Puerto Rico than we who are here. They were able to, because right now we have phone service. I'm speaking with you over my phone, but a week and a half ago, it was very hard for me to get connection here from my home, from where I'm speaking right now.
Luis, do you know of any instances of effective mobilizing in Puerto Rico now, despite the difficulties?
Excuse me.
The issue of people organizing, because that is maybe the flip side. So the kind of mobilization, the kind of organizing that people are doing, and what opportunities does that also represent to organize around the issue of the colonial status of Puerto Rico? Or is that a little further in abeyance given the crisis?
Right now, what we're trying to do, and what Rafael was saying is true, that that there's not many demonstrations out there, massive demonstrations. But what there is brigades of people helping other people, building community. And right now, the colonial question perhaps is not as fluid right now in the discussion. It's not the narrative so much. Right now, we're trying to build a roof for someone to have shelter. We're trying to bring clean water for someone to have drinking water, you know, and that's what where the concentration is. But at the same time, we're setting an example. We're building community. We're engaging people. We're letting them know that this is not the government. The government has been inept in meeting some of the concerns. These are people with the help from Puerto Ricans and the diaspora, with the help from people in solidarity that is providing this for these communities. That is our concern right now, to basically help those who need shelter, build the roofs, and engage them into helping others as well in the community. And perhaps with that example, we raise their spirits, and they can see that they don't really need to depend on the government. They can, some of these essential needs that they can fulfill with building a community, with finding other alternatives.
Rafael, how does this get turned into a mobilization against the domination of the economic interests of the island by the junta? How does that kind of activity that Luis was talking about now get parlayed into a movement to demand the reconstruction of Puerto Rico? But what kind of reconstruction are we talking about, or do we want?
I think, you know, there are going to be several stages that we will have to go through. As Luis was saying, we are still in the stage of trying to tend to very immediate, very urgent needs. People basically cannot go to a demonstration or go to... I'll give you a perfect example. When President Trump came to Puerto Rico, in normal times, there would have been, I am sure, a very big demonstration against Donald Trump and everything that he stands for, his racist, xenophobic, reactionary, anti-Latino positions, as you well know. There would have been a huge demonstration against Trump in Puerto Rico. But given the time that he came, nobody was able to do anything. We didn't have gasoline at that moment. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have water. We didn't have anything. So it was very frustrating to have President Trump come to Puerto Rico and not being able to express our feelings towards the policies of his administration, but that was the situation. Now, that will end. You know, I am sure that we will be able to progressively normalize the material situation in Puerto Rico, relatively speaking. And at that point, I think there are going to be important struggles regarding the policies that the government is going to try to implement. If they try to go through with the privatization of the closing of more schools, that's going to be a struggle. If they try to privatize the electrical system, that's going to be a struggle. Mm-hmm. If they try to remove certain communities in the name of reconstructing them but really gentrifying them, that is going to be a struggle. So all of these things are going to come up as the situation gets normalized. Beyond that, I think we have to try and generate a public debate in Puerto Rico about issues as the ones that I mentioned. I think there's a good ground for that. The notion that Puerto Rico cannot pay the debt, the $70 billion debt that the government of Puerto Rico has, cannot be paid, has to be canceled. I think that notion that many people perhaps were very doubtful about in the past, that demand, I think, will have more support now because people will understand that. We don't have houses. We don't have an electrical system. We have to reconstruct the roads. We have to reconstruct the health services. We have to house and feed a lot of people who have lost everything. How are we supposed to pay $70 billion of this debt? This is not possible. This is not acceptable. That demand has to be raised. I think it will, if we do it well, I think a lot of people are going to mobilize behind that demand. And in the same fashion, positive situation is going to be generated in terms of discussing what are we going to do with the colonial situation of Puerto Rico. If anything, I think that this present crisis has led many people to begin to see the reality of that colonial situation. Many people in Puerto Rico, unfortunately, but that's the truth, thought that once the storm hit, that the federal government was going to be here with billions of dollars to immediately reconstruct Puerto Rico And they have realized that this is not the case. This is not going to happen.
And
that we have to rely on ourselves. We have to reconstruct Puerto Rico ourselves. We have to rethink how we relate to the United States and how we relate to the world. And that is going to be an interesting debate. I don't know what the conclusion of the debate is going to be. But for those of us who are for self-determination, those of us who are for independence, those of us who want profound social change in Puerto Rico, there's going to be a space, an important space, to bring up all these questions. Because now, really, Puerto Rico has to reconsider itself, reinvent itself after this disaster.
And, Luis,
and that is a healthy debate.
Luis Rosa Perez, we're going to give you the last word. Off of what Rafael Bernabe was saying, what kind of reconstruction do we want? How would it look different? What's on the agenda for Puerto Rico that we here on the mainland must support?
There was no normality before the storm, and we can't return back to what it was. We have to contemplate something different. Like Rafael was saying, we have to make ourselves heard in this discussion of the status. Puerto Rican independence right now becomes a necessity for survival. And I believe that the Puerto Ricans in the diaspora, the communities throughout Chicago, New York, and wherever Puerto Ricans are going to have to play a major role in this as well. There are over 5 million Puerto Ricans now living in the United States, and the island is quickly being depopulated by Puerto Ricans. So we need to re-engage. We need to rethink of what strategies we can implement to re-educate people to present independence out of that intangible, make people believe that they can govern themselves, and we have the resources to govern ourselves. And I want to thank everyone from Chicago, from New York, from Cleveland, from everywhere who has helped in the recovery. Now we have to help in the reconstruction.
With all the demands and all the issues that Rafael Bernabe and Luis Rosa Perez have raised, brothers, thank you for spending some time with us. Stay safe, and we will make it so. And on the front burner, the issue of the status, the independence of Puerto Rico, and, of course, the material rebuilding in an ecologically sound way determined by the people and not the corporate vultures. We want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.